Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Today, we open our show with some good news. COVID-19 cases across our region have dropped sharply, and vaccines are rolling out. A major vaccine superstation has opened in East County, and more vaccination sites are coming soon to pharmacies and other locations, including fire stations in our rural and mountain areas. Find out how you can get vaccinated on today's show. County supervisors are moving closer toward legalizing cannabis sales, manufacturing, and growing in the unincorporated areas of San Diego County, and we'll have details. Plus, hear about beefed-up enforcement funding to shut down black market pot shops. On Green Scene, supervisors will be voting this week on whether to purchase a large parcel of land in scenic El Monte Valley. Lakeside residents in support of the plan are holding a walk to save El Monte Valley. On Wednesday, county supervisors will vote on a controversial renewable energy overlay plan that would open up broad areas across East County for industrial wind and solar development. Learn why some residents are concerned on today's show. If you're looking for a wet and wild way to pop the question with Valentine's Day coming up, listen up to hear about a contest being held by Soapy Joe's Car Wash, where couples are invited to propose in a tunnel of love for a chance to win wedding rings, cash, and car washes to start out their married lives. A search for a missing runner in Mission Trails Regional Park ended tragically after his body was found in flooded river waters. Now his mother is calling for safety steps to protect other hikers and runners from being swept away trying to cross the fast-moving current. On our Capitol Report, hear about efforts to hold Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene accountable for making death threats against members of Congress and more, including a censure resolution introduced by San Diego's own Congresswoman Sarah Jacobs. Now, if you're looking to get out of the house for some socially distanced recreation, California's state parks have reopened campgrounds. Hear what's open in San Diego County on today's show. And then on Crime Beat, we'll have updates on a shootout on the Morona Reservation, a deadly shooting outside an illegal dispensary in Spring Valley, an assault on a woman walking her dog in La Mesa, and a prostitution sting that arrested 30 Johns and a pimp. If you're looking for a wild way to give back to your community and help animals in need, volunteers and interns are needed at Lions, Tigers, and Bears, a nonprofit sanctuary in Alpine. Next up on 2021 Talk from Public News Service, we'll have some national news stories today, including the latest on a COVID relief plan in Congress, a lawsuit against Fox News over its claims about voting machine fraud, a national poll on impeachment of former President Donald Trump, and a student debt relief plan supported by the Biden administration. On our education report, learn about awards presented to local school counselors, including two here in East County, and how you can volunteer to serve on a newly created Citizens Bond Oversight Committee in the La Mesa Spring Valley School District. From California News Service, hear about a devastating decline in monarch butterflies in our state, where the population has dropped 99%. In Santee, hikers found human remains near a trail in the Finita Ranch area, but the identity of the deceased is not yet known. Housing for seniors is needed across California, and we'll have a special report today from California News Service on this. Now, if you own a small business, here's some good news. Verizon is offering small business grants of up to $10,000 each, and the application period is this Monday and Tuesday, February 8th and 9th. We'll have some Best of East County episodes on our show today, including an interview with Dick Pennock from the Railway Museum in Campo, reliving the glory days of the rail line in East County. Plus, we'll take you on the road to the Desert View Tower, one of the quirkiest landmarks along Interstate 8 in Hukumba Hot Springs. We'll also have a report on South American palm weevils that are killing palm trees in San Diego County. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
The rollout of COVID-19 vaccines may be having a positive effect, with the number of new COVID cases dropping sharply. Over 320,000 vaccines have been administered so far, or around 2% of the adult population countywide. The drop in cases may also be due to a stay-at-home order in effect during most of January and an end to the post-holiday season surge in cases. On Monday, January 30th, county health officials reported 1,082 new cases, the fewest in over a month, and no new deaths. The percentage of county residents testing positive for COVID has also dropped from more than 13% in mid-January to a daily average of 8.5% over the past 2 weeks. Hospitalizations are also declining, with just over 1,300 people hospitalized as of January 30th, down from a record high of over 1,800 on January 12th. That's a 23% drop in hospitalizations. Although the county reported 342 new hospital admissions on Monday, hospitalizations overall continue to decline. The number of patients in intensive care units was 392 as of Monday, down from a record high of 438 set on January 20th. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Brianna Gomez.
This is Angela Kurish with a health report. A COVID-19 vaccination superstation is now open at Grossmont Center Shopping Mall in La Mesa. Operated by Sharp Healthcare, the new walk-up clinic is vaccinating people from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday. The county sites, including Grossmont Center, are currently vaccinating people age 65 and older, as well as those in the state's Phase 1A, such as medical workers. All county vaccination superstations and other clinics require appointments and can be made at vaccinationsuperstationsd.com. Up to 1,000 doses a day will be administered initially at Grossmont Center, but the site's capacity can be expanded to provide up to 5,000 vaccinations every day. East County Magazine's editor visited the Grossmont Center superstation on its opening day, February 2nd, taking her mother to receive the vaccine. Unlike Petco Park, the Grossmont Center site had no traffic or parking problems, and getting the vaccine took about 45 minutes from arrival time to completion. Although this is a walk-in, not drive-through vaccination site, wheelchairs are available on request for those not able to walk or stand. Masks and social distancing are required. This location replaced the site Sharp Healthcare had been operating on Wakarusa Street. Appointments made for that site transferred to the superstation at the mall. Other county-run vaccination superstations include Petco Park in downtown San Diego, the Old Sears in Chula Vista, and California State University San Marcos. Many other smaller county clinics are also currently vaccinating people throughout the region. In addition to the superstations in urban and suburban areas, CAL FIRE has begun administering vaccinations to residents in rural and mountain areas. Dr. Wilma Wooten, the county's public health officer, says, "We're prepared to get shots in the arms as many of San Diegans as possible when more doses come to the region. Getting vaccinated is the best defense we have against COVID-19." President Joe Biden's administration has announced that pharmacies will soon be receiving vaccinations this month as well. Again, the website to sign up for vaccinations at county superstations is at vaccinationsuperstationsd.com.
This is Alexa Oslowski with an update on new vaccination locations. In addition to the county's vaccine superstations, more locations are rolling out for people to receive the COVID-19 vaccination. CAL FIRE has begun vaccinating people at fire stations in rural and mountain communities such as Julian and Borrego Springs. Starting February 11th, vaccines will be available at some CVS pharmacies in San Diego County. Appointments can be made online starting February 9th at cvs.com as stores begin receiving shipments of the vaccine. You can also register through the CVS Pharmacy app on your cell phone or by calling CVS Customer Service at 800-746-7287. Walk-in vaccinations without an appointment will not be provided. As more supply becomes available, CVS will expand to more locations and offer additional appointments. The vaccines at all locations will be offered to those meeting state qualifying criteria, which includes healthcare workers and others in Tier 1, as well as seniors age 65 and up. You can search for additional vaccination locations at the state's website, calvax.org.
San Diego County supervisors last week moved closer to legalizing and regulating marijuana businesses. Supervisors approved having staff bring back a plan within 90 days for reform of the county's policies after obtaining input from community planners and other stakeholders. The plan would create a framework to legalize and regulate sales, manufacturing, and farming of cannabis or legal marijuana, while creating jobs in unincorporated areas, also beefing up code compliance to shut down illegal operations. The supervisors are expected to vote on the new regulations by July 1st. The proposal was brought forward by Supervisors Nathan Fletcher and Nora Vargas. Newly elected Supervisor Joel Anderson, aware that the measure had a clear majority for passage, successfully added an amendment to provide $500,000 in funding for aggressive enforcement to shut down illegal pot shops, labs, or other unlicensed marijuana facilities starting immediately, even before any new regulations are adopted. Anderson said, "I've heard the community's concerns regarding illegal pot shops, and I agree that aggressive enforcement must be implemented." He called the board action a framework of what our cannabis ordinances should do and says he's working to ensure that any changes include full transparency and community input. He also pushed to assure that community planning groups would have an opportunity to weigh in and amended the original resolution to expand buffer zones around sensitive uses such as schools, parks, churches, and daycare centers. The proposal also includes a social equity component intended to help communities impacted negatively by the war on drugs apply for permits and seeks to create good-paying jobs through labor peace agreements in a business with 10 or more workers. Now, currently, all cannabis businesses are illegal in the unincorporated parts of the county, except for a handful of dispensaries grandfathered in for several years after the prior board legalized sales and later outlawed such operations again. But while cities such as La Mesa, Lemon Grove, and San Diego have provided legal licensing of dispensaries after statewide voters approved legal use of both medicinal and recreational cannabis, prohibition has resulted in a flourishing black market in the unincorporated areas. Illegal operators have overloaded wiring, caused fires and explosions, led to increased crime, access by minors, and in some cases, sold dangerous adulterated products and narcotics. Supervisor Fletcher said in the hearing, "Unsafe products are being sold in unincorporated areas. We want to clean this up and have a good system in place." Licensing has largely eliminated many of those problems, since the state requires testing and inspection of products, strict ID rules for customers are enforced, and video cameras are monitored by law enforcement to cut down on crime. However, when taxes have gone too high in some areas, illegal shops have again popped up, showing a fine line is needed in a regulatory framework. Supervisor Vargas noted that cannabis taxes have the potential to help the county make up for revenues lost due to the COVID-19 pandemic. The county received 157 emails on the issue, and many residents spoke both for and against the measure. Some voiced concern on impacts on communities. Gene Duffy of Julian contended this would corrupt our way of life and put high drivers on the roads. Several community planners expressed concerns over impacts on neighboring properties and water supplies in the case of commercial growing operations. But Hanuk Bey, executive director of the San Diego Farm Bureau, said the Bureau supports the measure so that farmers here can remain competitive in the agricultural market. Lincoln Fish, the operator of Outco, one of the county's few legal dispensaries near Gillespie Field, stated expanding the legal program is the only way to stop the illegal operators. Brian Buxley, a disabled veteran and grower, said his business has been involved with medical testing of cannabis on PTSD, or post-traumatic stress syndrome, in veterans, but he had to set up operations outside of San Diego to legally do so. A woman veteran spoke up, stating that cannabis helped her PTSD. Rudy Reyes, the worst burn victim of the Cedar Fire, said he turned to cannabis because he was overdosing on morphine and urged supervisors' support. One controversial issue is whether or not to allow people convicted of past marijuana violations to own or work in legal cannabis businesses. The proposal as drafted would allow this, but both Anderson and Desmond oppose this provision. Some speakers worry that legalization might make it easier for teens to access marijuana, but Supervisor Fletcher said that according to the Journal of American Medicine, based on U.S. Center for Disease Control data, cannabis use in teens actually goes down after establishment of a regulated and legal framework in a jurisdiction. Supervisor Anderson cited concerns over illegal pot shops, including one near a school in Lakeside, so he proposed adding $500,000 for immediate enforcement to shut down illegal operators. His amendment was adopted unanimously. Supervisor Desmond noted that cannabis remains illegal under federal law and said he wished it could be dispensed at pharmacies for medicinal purposes. He objected to dispensaries selling THC vaping cartridges after the county cracked down on vaping stores, a stance he views as contradictory. The proposal then passed 4-1, with Supervisor Desmond opposed. And again, staff is supposed to bring a plan back within 90 days, with supervisors expected to have a final vote by July 1st. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Angela Kurish with the Green Scene Report. Lakeside residents are organizing efforts to persuade San Diego County supervisors to buy a 104-acre parcel of land in Lakeside's El Monte Valley from Helix Water District. Supervisors will vote Wednesday, February 10th on whether to make the land purchase that was proposed by Supervisor Diane Jacob. An earlier vote was postponed until after she left office due to term limits, so now supervisors will make the decision, including Joel Anderson, the new supervisor filling Jacob's former seat. A petition at change.org has gathered over 1,200 signatures in support of the land acquisition. In addition, a walk to save El Monte on Saturday, February 6th, aims to draw public attention to the cause. The walk is organized by East County Land Use Watchdogs, a nonprofit that has set up a website on Facebook called EC Watchdogs. The effort has support from residents and Native American tribal members. They have good reason for concern. Helix Water District sold another parcel in the district that is now proposed for a massive sand mine along the San Diego River, a project opposed by many residents due to noise, dust, impacts on equestrian-based businesses, and destruction of wildlife habitat. A flyer from the East County Watchdogs in support of the county land purchase in El Monte Valley states, "This land must be purchased by the county so it can be conserved and utilized for public good as open space instead of being left exposed to development that loses the area's rural character and doesn't have the community's interests at heart."
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
A vote by county supervisors on a renewable energy overlay plan has been postponed until Wednesday, February 10th. If approved, the major measure would designate vast swaths of rural East County for industrial-scale wind and solar energy projects. The aim is to make it easier to get approval of projects that provide clean energy to meet state renewable energy mandates amid a climate crisis. But the measure has also drawn strong opposition from some rural residents, including Donna Tisdale, who urges East County residents to contact supervisors to voice opposition over what she views as throwing East County, quote, under the bus as a renewable energy sacrifice zone. Tisdale is chair of the Boulevard Planning Group and founder of Backcountry Against Dumps, a nonprofit that has sued the county over several major energy projects with negative impacts in the region. Residents living near existing wind turbines have complained of noise, sleep disruption, and other health problems, flashing lights, visual blight from towers hundreds of feet tall, that's taller than the tallest building in downtown San Diego, and loss of property values for homes nearby. Solar projects have also generated some concerns, although fewer of them. Those concerns include glare, destruction of wildlife habitat, and potential depletion of scarce groundwater for the construction and cleaning of the panels. Both wind and solar projects raise the very real risk of wildfires, since they rely on new electrical lines and power lines have sparked many fires in the past locally. Wind turbines also each contain over 100 gallons of flammable lubricating oil. What happens if a wildfire hits one of those, or if they explode on their own? Several turbines have exploded in our region, sparking small brush fires that fortunately did not occur during Santa Ana winds, which might have resulted in major wildfires. Wind turbines locally have also collapsed and hurled off blades weighing up to 11 tons each. Backcountry residents say that they are not opposed to renewable energy. In fact, many of them, including Tisdale, have smaller-scale windmills or solar panels. It's the industrial scale in rural communities, with the power sent elsewhere to urban areas that use most of the power, which is drawing objections. The renewable energy overlay proposal is second on the agenda, at the supervisors' February 10th meeting, which starts at 9 a.m. Wednesday and will be held virtually online. For information on how to send in your comments or participate in the public meeting, you can visit the Clerk of the Supervisors' website. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
The body of 21-year-old Max Linnell, who went missing while running in Mission Trails Regional Park, has been found. A massive search was organized after Linnell, an experienced hiker, runner, and rock climber, went missing on January 30th. San Diego police tweeted that hikers located the body in the water the next day after a heavy rain. Linnell may have been trying to cross the rain-swollen river, then slipped and fell. His mother, Lori Yoder, called the discovery every parent's worst nightmare, though she thanked the many people who helped in the search or offered kind words of support, including strangers from around the world. She and the others are calling for the city to install a footbridge over the treacherous stretch of river where others have recently reported near-miss stumbles. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Angela Kurish.
Valentine's Day is coming up. If you're looking for a wet and wild way to pop the question, Soapy Joe's Car Washes has a unique setting for you. Last year, Soapy Joe's welcomed 10 San Diego couples to wed in a car wash converted to a tunnel of love at its Imperial Beach location. This year, the company has expanded its tunnel of love concept amid the pandemic to suit those looking for a drive-through wedding proposal. Starting on February 14th through February 28th, couples are invited to propose at Soapy Joe's and make a video of your marriage proposal at any of the company's 14 locations in San Diego County. Then, share your video on Instagram and ask your friends to vote for you. The winning couple will receive wedding rings from Honey Jewelry, $10,000 cash, and a year of free car washes after saying I do. You can find complete rules at soapyjoes.com. Just click on the Tunnel of Love image. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Brianna Gomez.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is Alexa Oslowski with the Capitol Report. The House of Representatives has voted to remove Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene from her committee assignments because of violent threats she made against members of Congress, among other inflammatory actions. The vote was 230-199, with 11 Republicans joining the Democrats to hold Greene accountable for her actions. In addition, San Diego's newly elected Democratic Congresswoman Sarah Jacobs has introduced legislation calling for censure of Greene and urging her to resign. Jacobs says, quote, "We saw on January 6th what can happen when elected leaders use their positions of public trust to encourage and incite violence. Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene has repeatedly demonstrated her support for the execution of leaders of the Democratic Party, and her presence in Congress is a threat to our democracy, our institutions, and the safety of every person who works in the Capitol," end quote. Greene called for the execution of House Speaker Nancy Pelosi in several videos. She also liked posts on Facebook that called for shooting Pelosi in the head and hanging other prominent Democrats. In addition, she's touted false conspiracy theories and incited violence, recently suggested that some legislators need to be hung for treason, the censure resolution states. The Republican House leadership drew criticism for appointing Greene to serve on the Education Committee after she claimed a mass school shooting was a, quote, "false flag," and made offensive remarks to a child survivor of another school massacre. While Greene has now apologized for her statements on school shootings, she has not apologized for her advocacy of violence targeting members of Congress. While some have called for Greene's ouster from Congress, that would take a two-thirds vote, which would require some Republican support. A censure resolution needs only a simple majority to pass.
California's state parks have reopened campgrounds, although some other facilities remain closed due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Here in San Diego County, you can now go camping again in Cuyamaca Rancho State Park, Anza Borrego Desert State Park, Palomar Mountain, San Pascual Battlefield, and several state beach campgrounds. You can find information on each of these parks and make a campground reservation online at parks.caa.gov. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Crime Beat report. A domestic dispute erupted into a shootout on the Barona Reservation in Lakeside on January 30th. When sheriff's deputies responded to the call on Capitan Grande, a man opened fire on several deputies, who fired back. The suspect, Gianni Oliver, also shot his girlfriend, who was later treated at a hospital and released. After a standoff with SWAT officers, Oliver surrendered, according to Lieutenant Thomas Seaver with the sheriff's homicide unit. Oliver is charged with attempted murder and assault with a semi-automatic firearm for shooting his 23-year-old girlfriend. A convicted felon, he also faces charges of illegal possession of a firearm and ammunition. None of the five officers were injured. Sergeant Michael Cruz has been with the Sheriff's Department for over 14 years, and the four deputies, who work for the Ramona, Poway, and Lakeside substations, have worked at the Sheriff's Office anywhere from 2 to 22 years each. Over in Spring Valley, the sheriff is asking for public help to identify who shot and killed a man on February 2nd around 8:30 in the parking lot of an illegal marijuana dispensary in the 9100 block of Olive Drive. The victim has been identified as 37-year-old Jerome Francois Turley of San Diego. Anybody with information is asked to call the sheriff's homicide unit or Crime Stoppers if you wish to provide an anonymous tip. The deadly shooting occurred just a couple of nights after an illegal marijuana dispensary was raided in the same block on Olive Drive, the latest of many illegal dispensaries in Spring Valley shut down by law enforcement after supervisors approved additional enforcement funds to crack down on black market operations. The funding was proposed by newly elected East County Supervisor Joel Anderson. In La Mesa, the police department is warning the public about an assault in the 4300 block of Dade Avenue near Acacia around 8 p.m. on January 28th. The female victim described the suspect as a tall, white, or light-skinned man, around 6 feet 2 inches tall, with a thin build and a foul smell, which suggested he may be homeless. The victim says she was walking her dog alone when a man yanked her into the bushes. When the dog tried to bite the suspect, the victim threw herself down an embankment, tucking and rolling to escape. The man fled, and the victim ran to a nearby household to call 911, she says. Police have added extra patrols in the La Mesa area after dark while they work to identify the suspect. The San Diego Human Trafficking Task Force conducted a three-day operation in late January across the county targeting sex buyers and traffickers. The task force, along with multiple law enforcement agencies, arrested 30 men for solicitation and one man for pimping, pandering, and possession of a concealed firearm after he recruited an undercover detective into prostitution online. The San Diego Human Trafficking Task Force encourages the public to report human trafficking to their local law enforcement agency or by calling the National Human Trafficking Hotline at 888-373-7888.
Lions, Tigers, and Bears Animal Sanctuary in Alpine is looking for volunteers and student interns. Anyone who loves animals is welcome to apply, from high school kids to veterinary students. The nonprofit certified rescue facility is home to nearly 60 animals, including not only lions, tigers, and bears, but also bobcats, a leopard, a mountain lion, and other big cats. There are also rescued domestic animals, such as a miniature horse, a llama, and a macaw. Duties for volunteers range from making bear food to helping with landscaping, from tending livestock to office work, says founder Bobby Brink. Each volunteer receives passes to the facility, behind-the-scenes access, and t-shirts, as well as invitations to volunteer appreciation events. You might even earn the opportunity to feed a big cat or bear along with a keeper, bring family and friends for visits, and watch the veterinary team at work. The facility follows COVID-19 safety protocols to protect all volunteers, staff, and visitors. To learn more about volunteering or internships, you can visit lionstigersandbears.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Alexa Oslowski.
The La Mesa Spring Valley School District is establishing a Citizens Bond Oversight Committee. Applications are due by February 19th if you would like to serve on it. Last November, voters overwhelmingly passed Measure V, a $136 million construction bond to modernize and repair aging schools, improve campus security, and upgrade technology to support 21st century teaching and learning. The Citizens Bond Oversight Committee will be responsible for informing the public about the district's expenditure of bond proceeds, reviewing expenditure reports produced by the district to ensure that bond monies are expended only for the purposes outlined in the bond, and presenting to the Board of Education during public session an annual written report outlining their conclusions about the expenditure of Measure V bond money. For more information, visit the district's website at lmsvd.net. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
Welcome to 2021 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times. The House removed controversial freshman Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene of her committee assignments late yesterday. The Georgia Republican faced backlash over violent and racist rhetoric and her embrace of conspiracy theories. Before the vote, Taylor Greene said she was swayed by false online information.
I also want to tell you 9/11 absolutely happened. I definitely want to tell you I do not believe that it's fake.
Parties sometimes strip assignments from their members like Republicans did to Iowa's Steve King in 2019. But it's a first in modern times for another party to do so, although 12 Republicans joined the Democrats to remove her from both the House Education, Labor, and the Budget Committees. The latest on former President Donald Trump's impeachment trial. His lawyers denied a request from House impeachment managers for Trump to voluntarily testify. The request noted that refusal to testify under oath could count against him at trial. The Senate could also use the subpoena. Earlier, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said she has faith in the case.
I have great confidence in them, and we'll see. We'll see if it's going to be a Senate of courage or cowardice.
Meanwhile, new polls from Quinnipiac and Marist show more Americans favor conviction than acquittal. Fox News and some of Trump's closest allies are defendants in a new $2.7 billion lawsuit filed by electronic voting systems maker Smartmatic for allegedly perpetuating false claims that the election was fraudulent. On foreign policy, President Joe Biden announced the end of U.S. support for Saudi-led operations in Yemen. Biden also called on Burma's military to end its government coup and release detainees.
We will work with our partners to support restoration of democracy and the rule of law and impose consequences on those responsible.
And the U.S. and Russia have agreed to extend the START Treaty, the bilateral pact that limits nuclear arms. In the Senate, it's called the Votorama process and started last night. It allows for a flurry of amendments to slow down or change a budget resolution during debate. The resolution allows President Biden's COVID relief bill to pass without GOP approval. Here's a reaction from Republican Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell.
Democrats in Congress are plowing ahead. They're using this phony budget to set the table to ram through their $1.9 trillion rough draft.
But a bipartisan group of more than 400 mayors this week said the relief plan is long overdue. Speaking of relief, Representative Ilhan Omar of Minnesota joined other congressional Democrats yesterday to introduce a student debt resolution.
We are taking a needed action to tackle the student loan debt crisis by using executive authority under the Higher Education Act to cancel up to $50,000 in student debt for federal loan borrowers.
The White House says it will consider taking executive action, but would welcome a bill from Congress. On day one, Biden signed an executive order pausing federal student loan payments. For Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Mary Sherman. Thanks for listening.
This is Miriam Raftery with an education report from KNSJ. During National School Counseling Week, the San Diego County Office of Education honored three women with Counselor of the Year awards, including two who work at East County Schools. The School Counselors of the Year are Ann Pierce at Campo Elementary School, Bonnie Heyman at La Mesa Arts Academy, and Cheryl Baker at Mission Hills High School. Each of the winners received $500 from North Island Credit Union, sponsor of the awards. The winning counselors were surprised at their school sites and later recognized in a virtual conference. County Superintendent of Schools Dr. Paul Gotthold said of the winners, "They are shining examples of why school counselors are so integral to student success, especially now during distance learning and increased hardships due to the pandemic. They've provided the invaluable work of connecting with students who have been out of touch or disengaged and have highlighted the critical need for strong relationships with students and their families." The La Mesa Spring Valley School District is establishing a Citizens Bond Oversight Committee. Applications are due by February 19th if you would like to serve on it. Last November, voters overwhelmingly passed Measure V, a $136 million construction bond to modernize and repair aging schools, improve campus security, and upgrade technology to support 21st century teaching and learning. The Citizens Bond Oversight Committee will be responsible for informing the public about the district's expenditure of bond proceeds, reviewing expenditure reports produced by the district to ensure that bond monies are expended only for the purposes outlined in the bond, and presenting to the Board of Education during public session an annual written report outlining their conclusions about the expenditure of Measure V bond money. For more information, visit the district's website at lmsvd.net. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
The western monarch butterfly population that overwinters in California has dropped to devastating levels, with only 1,914 individuals spotted in this year's winter count. They've been declining for decades, but experts say they may have reached an extinction threshold in 2018 when volunteers only counted 30,000. According to Xerces Society conservation biologist Angela Laws, the population appears to be collapsing.
It's a 99.9% drop from the 80s, when there were an estimated 4 million monarchs overwintering along the California coast. So it's a big drop in their population. It's very worrying.
She says the reasons for the stark decline include the loss of native milkweed habitat, pesticide use, development at their overwintering sites, and climate change. The western population tends to return each winter along the California coast, from San Diego to Mendocino counties, with a particular concentration near Pismo Beach. Biologist Didi Soto also is with the Xerces Society and works with the Natural Resources Conservation Service to help farmers and ranchers plant pollinator habitat on their land, mostly native milkweed and nectar plants.
The rangelands are particularly important for monarchs because the habitat is more so protected from these heavily developed areas and areas where there's a lot of pesticide use and habitat degradation.
People can help the effort to save the monarchs by reducing pesticide use in their yards and planting monarch-friendly plants. For tips, check out SaveWesternMonarchs.org. In addition, the Endangered Species Coalition is asking supporters to write letters to Congress urging lawmakers to pass the Monarch Act, a bill that would provide funding for projects to save the species. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
Hikers in Santee on Wednesday found human remains near a trail in the Finita Ranch area. Fox 5 reports that the hikers had gone off a trail near Summit Avenue and Summit Crest Drive to look for snakes when they spotted a skull and numerous bones. The sheriff's homicide unit is investigating, though it's not yet known whether the death occurred from natural causes or foul play. The medical examiner is working to identify the deceased and determine the cause of death. Anyone with information about this is asked to call the Sheriff's Department, or you can remain anonymous by calling Crime Stoppers at 888-580-8477. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
California faces an enormous shortage of affordable housing, and a group that advocates for older residents is looking for solutions. This week, AARP California has published a new report on the need for housing. It's the result of months spent convening experts and stakeholders to tackle the issue of affordability. AARP California Associate State Director Rafi Nazarians says the state can shore up support for affordable housing by reinvigorating the social compact between generations.
It refers to an implicit agreement between generations to share resources and support one another across phases of life.
The report found there's a strong perception that older adults tend to oppose affordable housing projects in their areas when they come up for local approval. AARP wants to reframe the issue, hoping to increase support among its millions of members for projects that allow everyone in a community to thrive. Nazarians says the research shows red tape is another huge obstacle to getting new housing approved and built because it can take years to comply with a thicket of environmental, land use, and zoning regulations.
The largest area of consensus was on the need for a much simplified process at all levels of government and at all junctures of development of affordable housing in California.
And the demand for affordable housing specifically designed for older adults is likely to increase. Statistics show by 2030, 1 in 3 Californians will be over age 50 and 17% will be over age 65. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
If you own a small business, listen up. Verizon is offering $10 million in new grants to help small businesses impacted by COVID-19. The application period is just 2 days, Monday, February 8th and Tuesday, February 9th. The grant funds may be used to pay rent, utilities, payroll, debts to vendors, upgrading technology, and immediate operating costs. Now, in an earlier round of Verizon grant funds, 777 small businesses got grants of up to $10,000 each. 90% of those small business grantees were minority-owned, and 88% operate in underserved communities, such as rural areas. You can learn more about small business grants from Verizon on our website at eastcountymagazine.org in our business section. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
Next up, we're going to play one of our Best of East County episodes, an interview done a few years ago with Dick Pennock from the Railway Museum in Campo, reliving the glory days of the rails across East County.
This is Helen Ofield from the Lemon Grove Historical Society bringing you the sounds of history. Today, we are resuming our conversation with Richard Pennock, the former president and CEO, founding member, and now the media coordinator of the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum Association. Dick Pennock, welcome back to the program.
Yeah, good morning, Helen. I'm glad to be here again with you. It's certainly my pleasure.
Last time, we learned about the size and operations of the Railway Museum. Our listeners can actually Google Pacific Southwest Railway, some variation of those words, and find you. But what's the main phone number?
The main phone number is area code 619-465-PSRM. That's 7776 on the dial.
I'm going to repeat that. It's 619-465-7776. Gosh, that's patriotic.
It is.
Sounds like the American Revolution. And it sounds like it was all the way out in Campo. You really have written the book on how to restore old trains and make them accessible to the public. Now, perhaps your most famous operation is that living history component, those weekend train rides at Campo. You are there as a conductor and locomotive engineer in full regalia, I might add. How much is a ticket, and do you still travel from Campo to Tecate?
We have weekend-only trains. We recommend that people check our website, psrm.org, to make sure of the schedule before they make the drive out there. It is a long way from San Diego, but certainly we feel it's worth the ride. We do not currently go to Tecate, and the reason is there is a railroad tunnel just over the international border on the Mexican side that burned and collapsed Christmas Day 2009. And since that time, the tunnel has not been repaired, and our monthly trips to Tecate had to be temporarily curtailed. So currently, we confine all of our operations and our special activities to the U.S. side of the border, between the border and Campo.
Why is the Campo train ride sometimes called the Polar Express?
Well, like all nonprofits, we do need to protect our bottom line, and we have many public activities, special activities during the year. The biggest one being our Santa train in the Christmas season. The first train runs the day after Thanksgiving, and we run 12 to 15 of those on consecutive weekends through the Christmas season. It is extremely popular, sold out every year, and as a matter of fact, Helen, members can buy their tickets for it right now.
Wonderful. Parents out there, get ready. Richard, at the dawn of the railroad, nobody had a union. There were no OSHA rules, occupational safety and health. So what were some of the dangers to, say, a brakeman on the railroad or another worker?
Interesting you ask about the brakeman, because on the railroad, particularly in the early days, that was one of the most dangerous occupations in train service. Now, even then, as now, you could get a job on the railroad in the office and never have to worry about ice and snow and sleet and storm. But the brakeman's job, before the days of air brakes, required that the brakeman, and they were all men in those days, had to ride the tops of the freight cars on a freight train in all weather, and they lost many of them in service, so there was generally always a job available, a job opening for brakemen, because the turnover was pretty high. It was a very hazardous occupation. Now, the passenger brakeman had it a little easier. He rode inside the passenger coaches, normally with a conductor, so that wasn't quite so bad. But the freight brakeman on the freight trains, pretty horrible job.
Now, when people were riding the rails, which is the subject of poetry and song and folk music and all of the lore of the 1930s, really, what was that like for somebody to ride the rails? Where are you?
You mean like a hobo?
Yes.
Well,
In a word.
There were two different types of illegal rail riders, hobos and bums. Bums in those days had the same connotation it has today. Hobos sometimes were of a different cut. Sometimes they were riding the train illegally, but sort of looked the other way officially, because they were searching for work. They were moving from one workplace, one seasonal workplace possibly, to another, and many of the railroads often cut them a little slack and would not necessarily kick them off. They were all lumped under the term hobo, but there were differences. The bums often spent their evenings in jail when they were caught, whereas the hobos were, if you can say, maybe a somewhat higher echelon of itinerant society, shall we say.
Dick, the classic movie image is of a group of hobos. These are lonely guys in felt hats who go and offer to chop wood for a sandwich. They're all together in an empty freight car. They jump off at different points. Are we saying the wino, some poor tragic guy, is literally under that freight car? If we're riding the rails, we're so close to the rails, we're almost on them. Is that what that phrase means? It's a scary thing.
Well, not necessarily, but certainly there have been a lot of fatalities by bums, winos, others that aren't supposed to be on the property, going to sleep in a drunken stupor on a railroad track, which can be a very fatal exercise. And it happens often on the Mexican side of the border, particularly at night. It even happens on the U.S. side. It's an unfortunate part of railroad operation. There are people that don't watch the crossing signs when they're crossing railroad tracks in their car or on foot. And in spite of all the warning signs and all of the measures the railroads try to take to promote safety, there
we
are still
tragedies even now.
Still tragedies.
Exactly. Richard, you have been intimately involved with railroads for all of your life, long ago and far away, as a carefree, wind-in-your-hair young man. Didn't you ride the rails? Have you had personal experience?
I did, and I do. Even in my senior years, I continue to have experiences that I cherish very highly. I will tell you that I have never had professional railroad experience. I get asked that question a lot. But I did try to get a job with the railroad in Oakland, California, back in the mid-1950s, right after I got out of high school, because I wanted to become a fireman on a steam locomotive. And unfortunately, the railroad was getting rid of its steam locomotives at the time, and they wrote me back a Dear John letter saying, well, we're sorry, but we've laid off most of our firemen because we don't have a need for them anymore. And I always look back on those days and wonder if should I have continued with trying to get a railroad career.
Were you hand-firing a coal-burning?
No, that was on an oil-burning locomotive. It would have been had I got the job. But I had that opportunity many years later when we founded the museum. But you asked about some other adventures that I have had over the years, and those have been many, particularly with regard to trains. And I had one, and I have to tell you up front, Helen, that this was strictly illegal. Do not encourage anybody to do this. It is strictly forbidden and against the law. But I was a young, headstrong, adventurous kid in those days, and I and others decided to hop a freight train on the railroad that we currently operate on, and we were going to take this ride through Carrizo Gorge and just have a ball. So we encamped ourselves on a flat car in a freight train, and we were coming back from El Centro in late afternoon, and there are 17 tunnels just in the 11 miles of the Carrizo Gorge section, and the first tunnel is protected by an overhead structure called a telltale. Basically, it's just a wooden framework with ropes with knots on the end of them hanging down about 3 feet below the top of this gantry. And it's designed to warn a trainman on top of a car that there's a tunnel or limited head clearance coming up. So should they be facing the wrong way, it warns them that you better duck because there's something coming up that might take the upper part of your torso off. So I was facing the wrong way when we were coming up to the first tunnel and enjoying the view and the fresh air in my hair, and all of a sudden this telltale hit me in the back, and I immediately flattened on top of the car, and had I not done so, the tunnel was coming up in about an eighth of a mile, and I would have been a dead person. So it was
Richard,
a very hazardous.
Thank you for sharing that. And dear listeners, this does fall under the heading of don't try this at home, unless you are the body double for Sean Connery. I think we've all seen somebody or Steve McQueen fall to the roof and suddenly there's a tunnel and the audience is aghast. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome, Helen.
Dick Penick, this has been a wonderful conversation. I want to thank you for stopping by and sharing the lore, some of the lore. There's obviously much more from the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum. We didn't even get into the archives, and I know you have a big, big archive of precious material. Thank you, listeners, for tuning into the Sounds of History. I'm Helen O'Field.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
We're on the road in East County, visiting some amazing towns and meeting some incredible people across our region. Welcome to another adventure on East County Magazine's On the Road.
This is Hayden Parsley, on the road in Hucumba Hot Springs for East County Magazine. You can take a trip into California's past at the Desert View Tower, a quirky and whimsical relic of the past that is still open to the public here in San Diego's East County. Located just off Interstate 8 at the Incapa exit, the tower is poised on a rocky overlook surrounded by desert on all sides. Built in the 1920s by Bert Vaughn, a real estate tycoon who owned much of Hucumba, this 70-foot watchtower has become a tourist attraction and a local landmark on the outskirts of the small town known as Hucumba Hot Springs. Originally built to commemorate the area's rough pre-highway history, the tower houses a small museum filled with artifacts and oddities of California's history, including our region's Native American, Spanish, and pioneer past. The top floor of the tower is an observation deck with a coin-fed telescope that provides a breathtaking view of Imperial Valley and the Anza-Borrego Desert, though now somewhat marred by a wind farm. In 1950, a gift shop was added around the base of the tower. The shop still operates today and is filled with an eclectic mix of items such as geodes, gems and minerals, vintage postcards, historic and travel books on our region, arts and crafts items such as handmade Tecate tiles, onyx bookends, musical instruments, carved animal sculptures, and more. Roaming this area of the tower are the owner's many friendly dogs that add to the rustic charm of the location. You can also get a workout pumping a player piano while listening to old-time tunes. While I was there, the wind was gusting. It was a bit chilly and I wished I had a better coat when I reached the top. The owner says this is atypical though, and that it is warm and sunny most days. The proprietor, Ben Schultz, as many colorful stories on East County's history, culture, and colorful characters, having operated the site for many years. Boulder Park at the Desert View Tower was created in 1933 by an unemployed engineer, Merle Ratcliffe, who was out of work during the Great Depression. He sculpted reptiles and fanciful animals out of the huge stone boulders. I didn't get a chance to tour these, which will be an adventure for another time.
This is Jonathan Goetz with East County Magazine's Agricultural Report. The invasive South American palm weevil has destroyed an estimated 10,000 palm trees in our region, according to researcher Mark Hoddle at the University of California, Riverside. Locally, it's been found in El Cajon, Bonita, San Diego, and South Bay communities. The destructive weevil was first found in our region in 2010 in Tijuana, Mexico, and has since spread across our county and into Arizona. In San Diego County, the pest is primarily infesting Canary Islands date palms since its discovery here in 2011, but it is known to attack other species when Canary Islands date palms are not available. Left untreated, it will ultimately kill the iconic trees, best known for lining waterfronts along some of San Diego's most prominent waterfront tourist destinations. The adult South American palm weevils are black with wings. They measure about 1.5 inches long. Larvae are white and pupate in fibrous brown cocoons in the infested crown of the palm tree or in tunnels drilled by the insects into the base of palm fronds. Deep Look, in A Real Alien Invasion is Coming to a Palm Tree Near You, puts it like this.
She lays her eggs down in those tunnels, and her spawn eat the palm from the inside out.
Early symptoms include damage to fronds emerging from the center of a palm tree's crown. Leaflets may appear clipped or notched. Once the palm heart is heavily damaged, the crown may tilt or collapse, dropping to the ground and posing a hazard to anyone underneath. So far, the only way to save the palms once infested is to apply systematic pesticides on a regular basis, though this may pose hazards to any wildlife that feeds on any part of the palm. Testing of several pesticides is currently underway. Consultation with an arborist is recommended. Removal of an infected palm tree is a more environmentally friendly option. Besides posing a threat to ornamental palms, state agricultural officials are concerned that the pest could spread to the Coachella Valley or other commercial date-growing areas, which produce $68 million worth of dates annually in California. Residents are asked to report any palms suspected of having South American palm weevils to the County Department of Agriculture and to researchers at the University of California, Riverside.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine radio show. If you would like to be the media, here's your opportunity. We're looking for some more talented volunteers for our East County Magazine radio show. So if you've got radio experience or just a great voice, or if you'd like to get experience writing scripts or special reports for the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, we'd like to hear from you. You can call us at 619-698-7617 or send an email to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We're your community media, bringing you news from our region that reflects the public interest, not special interests. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County into Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Goetz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.